I'm Martha McCallum, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. I'm Chris Foster. Tesla and the Elon Musk meltdown.
You want somebody that is in control, not somebody that said he had the most excruciating year of his life, that he slept on the floor in the factory, that he's working 120 hours per week.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Medical schools say we're running low on family doctors in this country, so some are trying to fix that with free medical school tuition.
Many of our medical schools are trying various creative ways to reduce the indebtedness of students.
And I'm Jamu Green. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Elon Musk grew up in South Africa in the 70s and 80s. He got into computers early, sold code for a video game for $500 when he was 12 years old. After graduating from the University of Pennsylvania, he and his brother started a web software company that sold to Compaq. Then came the online financial services company that became PayPal, bought by eBay. And now, Elon Musk is the founder and CEO of the electric car company Tesla and the private space travel company SpaceX. There's also a solar power company, a tunnel boring machine company, and work on artificial intelligence.
I thought about what are the problems that are most likely to affect the future of the world or future of humanity.
That was him giving a TED talk in 2013. 5 years later, after a mysterious tweet and an erratic New York Times interview, JP Morgan Chase analysts have downgraded Tesla stock and people are telling him to slow down. We asked Fox Business Network's Christina Partsenevelis, what's going on with Elon Musk?
What a broad question. It's like, what's not going on with the man? Right now, stock has dropped quite a bit, fallen below $300. You have analysts saying that it's just going to continue to plummet. There's a lot of trouble for him.
Well, there was this New York Times article.
Right.
Something shareholders don't want to see in a descriptor is he alternated laughing and crying.
Right. Well, you don't want to see that from a CEO who's not only a CEO of Tesla, but SolarCity, Boring Company, and many other things. You want somebody that is in control, not somebody that said he had the most excruciating year of his life, that he slept on the floor in the factory, that he's working 120 hours per week. You want somebody that's going to take this company and build it into something profitable.
It's his joint. Can shareholders do anything about this if they really feel that he's a danger to the financial health of the company?
Yeah, they have a voting power, and then you also have a board of directors. But the complaint is the board of directors isn't very independent. They know him. They're on other boards, too. Mm-hmm. You already have several shareholders that have filed lawsuits against Elon Musk as well. These are primarily short sellers. Short sellers are those that bet the company will fall, the stock will fall,
okay.
And Elon Musk hates them with a passion. And so some of those lawsuits are representing them because they did lose billions of dollars when he had mentioned he was going to take the company private at $420.
Companies are expected to make announcements that could move stock prices in such a way that all potential investors are informed fairly, like in a press release. There are regulations about it. In 2013, the Securities and Exchange Commission ruled social media is okay, too. It's called the Reed Hastings Rule for the CEO of Netflix. The ruling came after one of his Facebook posts. Here's what Elon Musk did.
He was on the way to the airport. This is what he says. He was in the car. He tweeted out that he was going to take the company private at $420 a share and that he had funding secured. That's the big question. What does he mean by this? How can you take a company private? You need money to do that because you need to buy out all those shareholders that do no longer want to be part of this public company. And those that do want to stay on board, they can stay on board at $420. So it's a little bit complicated, but you just have to think he needs to get extra money. This company doesn't make any profit at the moment. So where is he going to get that extra funding? Because he could be charged with misleading investors by telling them, oh, we secured funding.
Because it moved the stock.
Precisely.
And, 420, a well-known sort of joke. That's when you're supposed to smoke
hot.
Up.
Yeah.
He denies he was high.
Yes, he denies he was high. He denies that it was anything in reference to 420, even though he pretty much said 419. I could say 419, but rounded up, 420 sounds better. It could be a joke within internally, because in the past, he's come out with the Model S, mm-hmm. the Model E, which or 3, which used to be or originally was going to be the Model E, then we Model X, and then in the future it's going to be Model Y. If you look at all of that, it spells sexy. So he's a jokester in a way. He was the one that joked that the company was going to go. He tweeted out on April 1st, bankruptcy. Like, it was a joke.
Right. Is he doing too much? Okay, his company, Tesla, that company, is named after Nikola Tesla, who was a brilliant guy, not the most brilliant businessman. He died broke. I'm not saying that Elon Musk is going to die broke, but should he be handing off more, especially the business end, and just let him do the big thinking stuff.
Well, think of Richard Branson. Richard Branson is considered a visionary as well and the mascot for his company, but he has stepped aside from a lot of the daily, he's not involved with all the small activities within the company. I can't personally say whether he should step down or not, but if you look at the facts right now, he is struggling. He has said that oscillating between laughter and tears in an interview. I know he was trying to get the sympathy card, but that's not what you want to hear. And he has a lot on his plate at the moment, definitely a lot. And he's struggling to find these investors. Should he step down? That's what a lot of people have said. But he did say, I'm not going to. And can you find somebody that will do the job better? I bet you a lot of CEOs would say they could, but...
I mean, he's taken electric cars a long way.
Yes, he has. Definitely. He's revolutionized it.
But maybe it's time. I'm just... positing that maybe you say, okay, I've taken this as far as I can. Ford, would you like to buy Tesla? And then move on to your space travel and your global warming and your mass transit at high speeds and time travel, whatever you want to do.
I agree, but think of the type of character that we've seen displayed so far. There is ego that is involved with this. And when you have a company that's been pretty much hit by short sellers, by analysts saying that it's going to fail, he's determined to prove otherwise because he has an ego and he doesn't want that tarnished. If he sells the company, he's essentially admitting he couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it. How's the product? Do people like Teslas? Are they doing a good job just with the cars themselves and then getting it to scale as far as being able to sell it at a more affordable price?
There are a huge Tesla following called the car works great. However, there has been some issues with the airbag deployments. There's been some issues with a long wait times to actually get the car. People have been waiting over a year. They put down their $1,000 deposit. Some of them have been reimbursed because it took too long. There's been a whistleblower now too that says that some of the Model 3 batteries were malfunctioning, but yet were still put in the car. So there are a few issues, but it still hasn't been proven to be true yet. Mm-hmm. So yes, there are some issues, but people love it. This is the future. You have China that is really trying to push forward with electric cars in their country. It's going to take over.
How about SpaceX? Am I going to Mars? The partnership with NASA is going well.
Right now, I don't think you would or we would within the short time, given financially how expensive it is. They say that they want to commercialize it, and it's not just Elon Musk. You have a lot of the big billionaires, I think from Bezos, Jeff Bezos from Amazon. He's got his own company as well, but he's just not in the limelight with that. So in the future, yes, I think space travel and commercial air travel is just very important in space.
All right, Elon Musk, if you're listening, take care of yourself, buddy.
Speaking of that, Arianne Huffington, actually, she mentioned in her blog just within the past 24 hours that he should take a rest, you know, working 120 hours. And you think he's going to take any advice from another CEO? No, he's
and
not.
And he said he already, didn't he respond? No, I can't do it. I just can't. I have to work 120 hours a week.
Exactly. He wants to get this company off the floor with the production of all these cars.
Fox Business Network's Christina Partsenevelis, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
This is Jamoo Green with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Imagine you're starting college and you know you're going to take on a certain amount of student loan debt, and then poof, it's gone in an instant. That's what New York University just did for hundreds of medical students. With $600 million it plans to raise from private donations, the school will pay the tuition of 93 first-year students and nearly 350 existing students. In a statement, NYU says overwhelming student debt is fundamentally reshaping the medical profession in ways that are adversely affecting healthcare. The average medical student loan debt is $190,000. NYU says those with more debt sometimes choose higher-paying specialties instead of going into primary care, pediatrics, or gynecology. Or they look at the cost and decide not to go to medical school at all.
If someone offered to cover it right now, scot-free, I would definitely... jump at the chance.
Andrew Abdelmalek is already going to Rutgers Medical School in New Jersey, despite the high price tag.
I mean, the cost was a little intimidating in the beginning, but I mean, I kind of did the math and realized, for a totally different set of reasons that I wanted to do this. But even financially, after a few years, it kind of would pay for itself.
Yeah. Tell me, how much is medical school going to cost you? Do you feel comfortable sharing?
So the tuition will be 40 grand a year, so it's 160 grand. And then if I live bare bones and don't spend a dollar on anything fun, my living expenses will probably be somewhere around 10 grand a year. And that's really, really cutting it close, like nothing luxurious at all. So, yeah, we're looking at 200 grand over the 4 years.
He's paying for that with money he saved during his time as a civil engineer. But many don't have it like that. This is their first career, and the cost is a bigger concern to them, according to Julie Frain with the Association of American Medical Colleges.
Many of our medical schools are trying various creative ways to reduce the indebtedness of students. What makes NYU's scholarship so unique is that it is for every single student, regardless of merit or need, for every year of medical school.
Is it in perpetuity, or is it just for the next 4 years?
They're hoping it's in perpetuity. Yes, they're in the process of raising additional funds. They are hoping to be able to have this be an ongoing effort, and they've committed to their currently enrolled students to cover the tuition for the remaining time there in the incoming class for all 4 years. So we've not seen anything on a scale like this. There are other schools that have created a large amount of scholarships that will go to students, but this is the only ongoing, fully covered cost of tuition that I know of.
It sounds like a big reason for this, at least according to NYU, is that we need more general MDs, family doctors, pediatricians. Because of student loan debt, doctors often go into specialties which are more lucrative, right? Like, what is lacking in medicine?
I think NYU has cited a concern that debt might be influencing career choices, but more importantly, might be discouraging otherwise qualified applicants from even applying to medical school. So I believe what they're trying to do is create an environment that encourages students from really any and all backgrounds to pursue a career in medicine. And there is concern over perceptions of debt or perceptions of cost being an influence. If you actually look at the data, it's really a small percentage, and debt ranks very low on the factors that have a moderate or strong influence on specialty choice. Students cite far more often things like role model influences, specialty content, personality fit, but that's not to say that there isn't a small percentage of students that debt does play a moderate or have a moderate or strong influence on their specialty choice.
I've heard that there is a doctor shortage more broadly, right? I don't know if there's one in like Beverly Hills or Manhattan, but there is one, right?
Yes. The AAMC is anticipating a physician shortage. If you look at students who take the MCAT exam but don't apply to medical school, one of the top reasons that they don't is the cost of medical education. They cite academics and cost, both very high, as factors that discourage them from applying to medical school. And I think part of this is NYU wants to create an environment that students who are well qualified and might be discouraged otherwise. And I think at some point they said that they were hoping that it would also increase the diversity of the applicant pool.
Do you think more universities are going to offer this kind of thing, or does it really just depend on wealthy alumni seeing a need and being willing to give these sort of endowments?
You know, it will be interesting to see how the medical education community responds. I think most schools would love to be in this position or to be able to offer such a generous program. But as you said, it takes a tremendous commitment, and it's a commitment from alumni, administration, donors, philanthropists. It takes a village, so to speak, to make something like this happen. And unfortunately, not all medical schools are in a position to be able to do what NYU has done.
The money in NYU's case will be coming from hundreds of supporters, but a large chunk was gifted by Kenneth Langone and his wife, Elaine. Langone is chair of the Board of Trustees and a co-founder of Home Depot. Another university got a similar gift, not as big as NYU's, but a month ago, the University of Houston's Medical School, where Dr. Stephen Spann is the dean, got an anonymous gift to do the same thing, pay for students' medical school tuition.
The gift amounts to $3 million, and it will provide full tuition fees for 4 years for our inaugural medical student class of 30 students.
So for the next 3 or 4 years, however long it takes them to graduate?
Well, it's a four-year program, so it'll essentially be about $25,000 a year for 4 years, which is $100,000 total per student times 30 students. But that'll cover their tuition and fees for their 4 years of medical school. So it's really great.
When you heard about this, that the medical school had been gifted $3 million, what went through your mind?
Well, gratitude. I think that it helps, you know, as you're starting a new medical school, it's an unknown quantity. So having that sort of incentive to bring students to take a risk going to new medical school is helpful. But perhaps more importantly, it also will reduce the ultimate debt load on graduation for these students and will allow them to choose careers as primary care physicians. Our goal for our school is that 50% of our graduates would ultimately practice in primary care specialties. You know, that's a challenge for a lot of medical students. So with the average debt of graduating medical students in the U.S. today is $190,000. And if you can earn 2 to 3 times as much as a procedural specialist than you could as a primary care doctor, you know, a lot of students end up voting with their wallets.
Have you had conversations with medical students throughout your career in which you found that to be the case, that students are worried about that student loan debt, and they are picking specialties that are maybe more lucrative than family medicine?
A few. You know, it's not something I typically talk to medical students about, but there is a consensus, I think, among medical educators around the country that the significant differential in compensation for procedural-based specialties from cognitive-based specialties ultimately does influence the career choices of our medical students.
Now, as for our medical student, Andrew Abdelmalek, cost didn't keep him from medical school, but he says, yeah, it is playing a role in what he'll practice.
It definitely, like, narrows down my choices. Towards the end of my medical school, you have to make a choice and you're kind of locked into it. I'm not considering family medicine or any kind of primary care. Even if I think I would enjoy it, I would try to find something that paid a little bit more money to try to like make it worth it for me, I guess. I know that that's kind of a heartless thing to say. Some people are really like passionate about family medicine. I don't think for me that I'm passionate enough to want to take the kind of pay cut that they take, which is why I think NYU is doing what they're doing. But I mean, I totally get the idea. Very few people that I speak to now who are first years or who are fourth year students are really like that crazy about going into pediatrics or family medicine. It does tend to be one of those specialties that people have to either take it or leave it, or you won't match to a residency. I hate to say that, but that's the impression that I get.
It's the new Jerry Willis podcast.
I love giving you an edge with your money. I like to break it all down so that you wind up with more money in your pocket, more confidence in your future.
Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Fox News Radio.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Jamu Green.
What's on your mind?
Dear Democrats, when women vote, Democrats win. When women get elected to office, the issues the Democratic Party holds dear get more love. Healthcare, education, childcare, opportunities for all instead of a few select people. These aren't opinions, they're facts. So why on earth would it take the Democratic National Committee several days to comment on the domestic abuse allegations against Congressman Keith Ellison, the deputy chair of the party? To be clear, women aren't the only ones who should care or do about domestic abuse. But in the age of Me Too, we are certainly paying very, very close attention to if the politicians, corporations, and community leaders are walking the talk of accountability. With all that is stake in the midterm elections, like if I alone can decide when I start a family, Democrats don't have the luxury of making unforced errors. the delay in the response, and the ambiguity of the investigation is an unforced error. Everyone must share the responsibility of building a culture of trust and respect for women in every industry and workplace, and it includes our party. Those are not my words. Those were the words of Tom Perez, former Obama Labor Secretary and current chair of the oldest political party, the Party for the People, the Democratic Party. Those words inspired me when I first read them on Twitter, because confronting the sexism and the racism and the sexual harassment issues within the DNC were a big part of my campaign's message. I don't know if the allegations against Congressman Ellison are true. While I pray that they aren't, I pray more that the institutions of the Democratic Party will set an example, will be a beacon of transparency and accountability for how institutions should respond when facing allegations and communicating about due process investigations. Women are planning to vote for Democrats in higher numbers than past midterms. When we lost a tiny percent of women in 2010 and 2014, Republicans took control of Congress. They shut down all ability to compromise on our nation's most critical issues and ushered in this divisiveness. We can't repeat that. We can't make unforced errors. Women are the backbone of the Democratic Party. Come November, women voters will have the last word. I'm Jamu Green.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.